Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Bob White.
Blog Talk Radio.
Bring out the best talk radio. Today we're talking about relationships, and we're going to talk specifically about how relationships bring out the best in each one of us and the attitude that we need to have, because if without the right attitude, relationships can bring out the worst in us. Yeah, because if I have an attitude where I'm blaming people, you know, and gee, we had a terrible date, and she was really neurotic, or we had a terrible date, and this guy was just totally self-centered, or I'm sick and tired of my wife and her nagging all the time, I'm sick and tired of my husband not doing anything around the house. Well, you may be sick and tired of it, but you're stepping into what we call drama and victimhood. Yeah, this comes from the drama triangle by Stephen Karpman, which is part of the transactional analysis tradition. And every drama has to have a good victim, and every good victim has to have a good persecutor. And every good victim and persecutor have to be a rescuer. That's what sells soap operas, TV shows, and movies. And it sells because we have that programming inside of us. And if we're going to bring out the best in ourselves and others, we need to take full responsibility for the fact that they reflect something in us. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is how to understand what the other person reflects in us. And you can learn about this with rightliving.com and get two free chapters to Dr. Judith's and my book, Transformed, The Science of Spectacular Living. So that's www.rightliving.com/two-free-chapters. Type that in, and that is something that will help you understand not only what I'm talking about, but how you can bring out the best until you become someone who has learned, grown, and changed so much you never could have imagined how magnificent you'd be. So today, we're on Bring Out the Best in Relationships. I'm going to focus a little bit more on the husbands and wives. We set up ground rules between husbands and wives that neither of them gets to have more than 50% of the blame on any issue, and each one has to take 100% of the responsibility. That's one of the most difficult things to look at. If my husband isn't doing what I want him to be doing, if my boyfriend isn't doing what I want him to be doing, the question is, what does that reflect in me? Alfred Adler talked about a thing called limiting beliefs. Chances are pretty good I've got a limiting belief that my partners don't want me to be satisfied. There are different kinds of limiting beliefs. There are limiting beliefs that I'm not good enough, that I'm not strong enough, that I'm not worthy. Whatever the limiting beliefs are, we all have them. It's part of the human race. We've been going back to Adam and Eve, explaining why we have pain. And we say that it's because of original sin, whether you're Muslim, Jewish, or Christian, or just an atheist in those traditions. And we definitely want to understand that this is part of the human condition. There's no one you have ever seen in your life who does not have limiting beliefs, who has fully fulfilled their potential. So we're all learning and growing in this. We call that mutuality. And I've got our first caller is Lynn Franklin. She's been married for 24 years. And she wants to bring back the sex and excitement in her relationship. And for starters, sex is a nice bridge, and it helps a lot of people make up for the fact that they don't know how to talk. So when the sex and the excitement starts dropping away in relationship, usually the adventure of getting to know each other and explore with each other it isn't happening. We move into patterns. As human beings, we want routine. We want sameness. and sameness leads to deadness. Now, for some couples, sameness is we screw like bunnies. Well, that may be great or it may not be great. It may be great if you're also talking and learning and growing and understanding with each other, or it may just be a way that you compensate for the fact that you aren't really getting together. So when we look at bringing back the sex and the excitement in relationships, what we begin to talk about is what's going on between you two. How'd you get together in the first place? There's usually an original contract in a marriage. And so just think about this when you apply this to your 24 years. When you got together, one of you was probably the one who was more alive, and the other one was the one who was more solid. One of you was the one who expressed more, and the other one was the one who kept things solid. And so as you get into the routine of life, you want to know what it is that is going to help you get back into the exploration with each other and get out of being stuck in these poles. Hi, Lynn. How are you? Can't hear. Okay, Lynn. How are you doing?
Hi, Bob. I'm interested in what we're going to talk about today.
Well, when the sex goes out, by the way, that puts you with the majority of couples in our country and probably the world. After 24 years, things can be pretty same. So tell us a little more about it.
You know, part of it is that the two of us have obviously our own roles in the relationship, and things go up and down. But you know, part two is that it's been there. We faced some challenges as a couple in the past year, and we're rebuilding trust. And the conversations now are good and deeper, but there's still some hesitancy, I think, on both of our parts about sex. And I figured it would be great to talk with you about that and what our next steps ought to be, the things that we could be aware of, for starters, and then how we can start to move to change things.
Well, you know, one of the wonderful things about having been together for a while is you can begin to appreciate how vulnerable intercourse can be. And so it's appropriate, actually, if you're rebuilding trust, that you're not jumping into sex. Otherwise, it might be one of those things I was talking about earlier that just compensates. So that you use the word trust is really, really important. And rebuilding trust starts with trusting full honesty and full interest in each other's satisfaction. And that's really where things start going dead in the first place. We get into habits and we don't know how to keep going on the journey together. So you two are at a very fortunate point. You're at a point where you've had a rupture, and you're working on trusting each other again. You're talking more, but you're still not fully engaging. You're not having the verbal intercourse you could have, even though you're having more of it. How does that fit so far?
That sounds right.
Okay, so when you think about it, Lynn, what do you think is not getting said that needs to get said? And I'm not talking about just jumping into why aren't we having sex. The question is, where is he with trusting you, and where are you with trusting him?
He trusts me about as much as he has ever trusted anyone. So I rank pretty high on his trust meter. He, on the other hand, is probably about a 6 on my scale of 10.
Okay, good. So what's missing, Lynn?
Well, you know, I think what's missing is that the two of us have a kind of a different worldview. And, you know, and let me give you an example. I spend more time talking to him about my feelings. I used to hang on and wait until I would get angry and then explode. And what I've been working on is sharing things as they come up. So instead of waiting until I'm angry and then yelling, I say, you promised that you would do this, and you didn't, and I'm disappointed in you. And I thought that his reaction would be, it's great, I'm glad you're talking to me about your feelings. But instead, his reaction was, your anger was a whole lot easier to deal with because I would just tune you out. Now that you're talking about being disappointed with me, that's harder for me to handle.
Well, that sounds like a pretty honest response on his part. And then what happens?
Well, and you know, and then of course it becomes, how do I continue to express myself and my feelings, and help him understand that I'm not interested in shaming him. I'm just interested in expressing myself, and then finding a better way for the two of us to be.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the word shaming, because disappointed is one of the worst things you could say to me. I'd rather have you tell me you're angry that I didn't do it. But disappointed, Lynn, puts you in an awkward authoritarian position, because it's essentially what grandmothers say to guilt trip their grandchildren into what they want.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. Well, my guess is this isn't the beginning, the first time you've been the authority figure for him in life.
Not surprising. And part of the baggage that he brings is that his mother was very authoritarian, and so if I'm not doing it, some of it is his projection that it's, you know, that it's old behavior that he's used to.
Well, projection's an interesting term, because that means that he's looking at you as if you were his mother. And isn't it interesting you've been a willing participant by being disappointed with him?
Well, you know, and so thank you for bringing up the idea of being disappointed, because I had not really connected that with the wagging of the finger, but it's in there.
Well, I guarantee you, though, that this isn't the first time you've been the authority for him. And this probably isn't the first time that he's tried to scurry away because he never dealt with his mother. You know, had he ever dealt with his mother's guilt trips, had he ever stood up to her, he would be more ready to join you in partnership.
Okay, so, and knowing this, then it becomes, how do I, number one, prevent myself from stepping into what is a familiar role to him and to me? So, and knowing about disappointment, that's a good cue for me. Thank you. And, you know, and number two, how do we start building new patterns of behavior that are, you know, more satisfying for both of us?
Well, you can tell him what you're getting and what you're understanding. At the same time, you can't force him to do his work. However, a very interesting read to help him understand what we're talking about is Transform, The Science of Spectacular Living, where we talk about the process of learning and growing and transforming. We bring together a lot of neuroscience, a lot of psychology, a lot of behavioral economics, and we're offering two free chapters of that today at www.rightliving.com/two-free-chapters. So I would really suggest you give him those chapters, and don't give it to him like he needs to get fixed, but suggest that you read through it together, because it'll help you begin helping him develop what sounds like what he needs is a much greater emotional vocabulary.
I would agree.
So
what, beyond that, what else should I be mindful for on my own as well? Because it's not just about him, it's about me too.
Isn't that nice, Lynn? You're still being the responsible one. In this case, I would love to give you a formula if I didn't think we were recreating your pattern of having to be the one in, you know, responsible, morally superior. I just suggest that you guys get on the same page and work it out together, where each one of you identifies your own learning and growing to do as you read the book.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, and I think Lynn caught my sarcasm on that one. And sarcasm is one of my strong points and weak points. But there are times when it's not appropriate to fit into somebody's script. And Lynn clearly has a script of being the one who's responsible all the time. And that is probably a big part of their rupture. So I didn't want to step into that issue with Lynn. Now we've got another caller, Jeff. Jeff's asking, why does he run away from a woman after he's had sex one time? Jeff, tell us about this one.
Well, it's a reoccurring pattern with me that I pursue a woman very aggressively until I bed her, and then I'm panicked, and I run. It's a consistent pattern for years. I can't get intimate.
How do you talk to yourself about the running? Do you come up with criticisms for her? Do you decide you're not good enough, or you just plain know you're pissing your pants scared?
I'm scared. I'm scared of the intimacy, or that she's going to, that I'm conveying to her that this is what she can expect. This is, I'm committed to her. I'm afraid of entanglement.
Well, why don't we back up a little bit, because I don't think this is about sex, but it's about intimacy. So given that you know you do this, you clearly are having sex before you're ready to take responsibility for that level of intimacy. So let's look at what you're jumping over in getting to sex when you're clearly not ready to face the fear of the sex. And in good part, it may be because you're not picking women with whom you're willing to make a commitment. I have no clue. Fill me in a little.
Well, I always think that they've got something going for them. I mean, I'm attracted to them, but it's a pursuit thing. It's a conquest thing for me.
So you want to get them to turn around and open themselves up to you.
Yes.
Well, how open was your mother emotionally?
She was pretty closed. She was very closed. Yeah.
So early on in life, Jeff, we equate love with what we experienced at the beginning. And if mom was distant, then you look at women as a conquest, getting them to love you. However, when they turn around and they open themselves up to you, literally, physically, and emotionally, you are now in unknown, uncharted territory, because it can no longer really be love, because love for you is pursuing mom's love, not getting it.
Oh. Ooh. Well. I didn't want to go back to my mother.
Back to our mothers. It's unavoidable. Now, some of us have completed our business, unfinished business with our mother. You clearly haven't. And whether your mother's alive or not, what stands here is you developed an early belief that you weren't lovable. And
that
you had to pursue mom's love by being a good boy. And so when you get a woman to open herself up in a way that says you're lovable, well, that goes against your core limiting belief about yourself in life. And you just need to take off. It's like, get me the heck out of here. And it because you will have to be in a position that you are really using relationship and living your life to find yourself lovable. I mean, it's like Groucho Marx said, who'd want to belong to a club that would have a member like me?
I've often thought that. What woman would want me? Got to see me clearly if she wants me.
Right. Well, that's a limiting belief that you have in life that's not just in relationship to women. So you probably find yourself trying to prove yourself everywhere. And no matter how much success you have, it's never good enough.
True. uphill battle all the way.
Right. So you haven't been able to enjoy yourself. And so this is a transformational move. And Alfred Adler is the one who first started helping people understand these limiting beliefs. We talk about it as your matrix. You were pretty well programmed by the time you were seven. So when you get to a certain point with these women, you're beyond what your program can handle. So you get terrified and you run. And
absolutely.
What, you know, I'm gonna do it again because I think it explains. If you want to understand the process of your own transformation, transformed, the science of spectacular living says way more than I can say in the next few minutes. So I would strongly suggest you go to rightliving.com, as I've said, /2 free chapters, and don't even take, I know you're not going to do this, but I suggest you don't take a woman to bed until you've read the book with her. I cannot tell you how useful that will be to find out what they're made of, because I don't think you have figured out yet that women, what is a quality woman who will care about you? You've mostly been attracted to women who were somewhat rejecting and standoffish up front. And so I suggest that you start thinking about, what kind of woman would it take for me to commit for the rest of my life? And when you find a woman who fits that picture, then make it a point to really talk to her a lot more before you go to bed so she understands that she's the scariest thing you've ever faced.
Okay. I have one more question. Fatal flaw. It's what I call... It's what I use. They have a fatal flaw. I can always find...
Yeah. That's what they call a defense mechanism. And everybody's got a fatal flaw. So you'll have to find one of them whose fatal flaw you're willing to live with. And talk to them about their fatal flaw. See how they deal with it. Are they responsible, open, and honest? And are you going to be responsible, open, honest, and willing to hear their perspective on your fatal flaw and to see if these fatal flaws can work their way out together? Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Bob.
Thank you. Hey, Brenda, you've said that opposites attract rather than people being a good match. Well, actually, opposites can be great. So tell me what we're really going into here, Brenda.
Oh, well, today I'm like really, really happy right now. I wanted to say something about sex because I have a similar thing sometimes when I have that sexual contact, and it feels like, to me, like it's it's like a chemical thing. Like, I get this big high and then it's just a crash afterwards. And so the person I'm dating now, we moved toward being sexual with each other, and the second time we did it, I just like got into this haze and this fog, and I was like, and I told him, I was like, okay, I'm having this like crash. And he's like, okay, well, we don't have to have sex, you know, we can just cuddle. And we've stayed in the relationship, and he was here last night, and we just cuddled, and I feel, like, very close to him. So I'm not sure whether the having sex is an intimacy thing or just, like, a hormone chemical thing that sends me spiraling down.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people feel the same way you do. That's why we have the hookup culture where a lot of young people are avoiding commitments. So you're not at all alone in this. As a matter of fact, there is no such thing as casual sex. When we start touching skin to skin, our yearnings are awakened. We start wanting everything that we haven't had. We start wanting to be loved. we start wanting to be accurately seen. We call it accurately seen in the here and now with positive regard, consistently and unconditionally. And that desire to be seen unconditionally is there in all of us. And usually there's some level at which in our earliest childhood, remember, we're programmed, our matrix is pretty much formed by the time we're seven. So we pretty much have decided that there's some part of us that wasn't lovable, that was too much. And when we start having that skin contact, see, my guess is you guys are cuddling and you're not doing too much skin-to-skin rubbing, body-to-body rubbing. It would probably be very difficult to avoid getting too turned on. So is that accurate?
Well, last night, yeah. I mean, we moved more toward that, and now we're like, okay, maybe not.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong. First of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with you getting foggy, since this guy is clearly committed enough to a relationship with you that it's you he wants and doesn't want sex. So for starters, you've picked pretty darn well to have somebody with whom you can work this through.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, as I've shared, there's so many things about him that on paper make him look like he's not a good partner for me, but in many ways he really is.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go into things like social status, intellectual match, because right now that's not where you're at. Where
yeah.
you're at is this person care about me?
Mm-hmm.
And your answer is a resounding yes. And because this person cares about you, you're willing to go into this extremely vulnerable territory. And that's what's really cool about what's happening with you. But I want you to really consider that skin-to-skin contact awakens all of our primal yearnings from the time we were little kids of being held, being seen, being known, and really feeling lovable. And there's no human being that feels totally lovable. There are people who've been told they were lovable, but they don't really believe it because they live in a very narrow zone of being the person that they could be. Every one of us has some part of us that we've decided is not desirable. So the hypothesis I'm working on with you, in the absence of going into any more deeply, my hypothesis is that this contact is evoking a very profound yearning in you, and the feelings are overwhelming. And that's no surprise, because oftentimes those feelings are very young, and sometimes before we ever have language. So you clearly are being overwhelmed with hunger and desire. And if you two go back and forth, this guy sounds like a pretty good love mate for you to be getting foggy with and stepping back.
The other challenge is that it's like an open relationship, and he doesn't want to be monogamous. And on the one hand, I'm like, oh, that's great, because then I can go and, you know, cuddle with other people. I don't need to have sex with multiple people, but I like being able to cuddle with other people. But I feel myself also, like, when I imagine him having that contact with other people, then I get jealous and scared.
Well, I'm going to stay away from the jealous and scared right now, and I want to go back to what I see as the positive movement in
okay.
what's to me.
And, okay.
and it's actually all the better that he's not pressing you for a commitment. And
oh, yeah, that keeps me present and, like, wanting him and, yeah.
Well, you know, it's back to what we were just talking about with Jeff, you know, wanting somebody that you can't have. So that may be a big part of it. And it may be that there's an element of this relationship of you wanting mom and or dad's affection and care no matter what, and that you're even more attracted because you can't have him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would continue to delve into these feelings and know that you're making a commitment to being lovable, that you're making a commitment to feeling safe with people, because chances are pretty good you felt safe to have intercourse with him because he wasn't committed. And chances
are pretty good. We actually didn't have intercourse, but yeah.
Well, whatever you're getting
that's
to.
That's true, yes.
Whatever the vulnerability is that you're getting to, chances are pretty good his unavailability and non-exclusivity is allowing you to begin opening a much deeper yearning. And it the more that you can meet that yearning with others, not just in cuddling, but if you can notice that yearning when you're looking at someone you're meeting, when you're dealing with a coworker or a client, that yearning's there all the time. And if you can learn to follow that yearning and engage with people in that, you will be doing whatever reconstructing it is that you need to do about developing yourself to be in love with yourself and really hold yourself as lovable and deserving of a man who's willing to commit to you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Well, blessings. Thanks a lot, Brenda.
Thank you, Bob.
So our next caller is Martha, and she's telling us that she's used to being treated badly by men and wants to know how to attract and keep a good man. What a fantastic, vulnerable question. So Martha, talk to me.
Hello?
Hi, Martha. I just
Hello?
Hi, Martha. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, great. Yeah, I just read the statement that you had sent in, that you're used to being treated badly by men, and you want to know how to attract and keep a good man who treats you well.
Right.
So tell me about that, please.
When my definition of love, because of my history, because of a bad childhood or a father that didn't express his love in healthy ways with my mother.
Okay. So you've clearly done some psychological work already.
Yes.
Okay, good. So keep
yes.
going.
So,
you figured out a lot of this story.
Yeah, so the way that I define love is, and when I come to a man that I'm attracted to, I define it by the things that I perceive as love, but it's not really love. It may be manipulation, or it may be, you know, games that we play, but eventually I will identify it as being something that is really not healthy and where I want to be. But I feel kind of stuck because that's what I know and recognize as love.
Okay, that's a pretty good explanation, but tell me more what that means, they treat you badly, and so I can get a better picture of what we're talking about.
They treat me badly. So there is a lack of commitment. I may recognize someone, and we may hook up for a date or two, and then that's it. They drop me like a hot potato, and then there's this whole thing of what's wrong with me. You know, what's wrong with me that there wasn't that. And what's wrong with me is what I perceive to be the issue is the my own self esteem, that I've picked someone that doesn't really fulfill my needs, my expectations, my needs, my my desires.
So when you say you hook up, does that mean have intercourse?
No, not anymore.
Okay, but so you'll have a couple dates with somebody, and they'll just not call, not say anything, and that's what you mean by treating you badly?
Yes, that, and also there is, if the relationship becomes, gets to a more intimate level, we start, fighting, and that's the way that we relate to each other, through bickering, through arguing, through negotiating it, my needs, your needs, or not really negotiating, but fighting about it, and blaming and and all these, and it becomes a game of games, and that's clearly not what I want, but that's what I get.
So you don't get physically abused, but you find that the man loses interest in pleasing you and fights off anything you want of him?
We end up just tangled up in games.
Yeah, okay. You've figured out a lot of this stuff, so you've kind of boiled it down to summaries for you, but I need some real concrete. Give me an example of somebody that you got close to, got intimate with, and it ended up being bickering and fighting. What was the bickering and fighting?
The bickering and fighting was, we did not live in the same, in the same state. And it was about, wanting to commit further, but there was this great distance, so that wasn't going to work out. But I maintained, even though the relationship was clearly not good for me, I continued to stay in it. And then the bickering and fighting was the way that I knew intimacy. And I stayed in the relationship for way longer than I needed to, and I still talk to this person from time to time because that's my definition of a relationship, but that's not really what I want.
I've got that. Was the fighting always around frequency of getting together and living together?
No, it was also about just bottom line values. Values and needs, and who
such
he
as?
Is and who I am.
Such as?
What we want out of life. I'm a vibrant person. I want to do things. I want to grow. And this gentleman is happy to just sit on the couch and watch movies. And that's not my definition of what I want for my life.
So we've got to go back to the beginning and why you're wasting so much time with this person. Because you're telling me that you've got what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy. You believe you're going to be treated badly, so you act in a way which includes investing too much in a relationship, and that causes the man to believe he can treat you badly. He treats you badly, and you go, wow, okay, this is love, but this is also what I expect. And you're stuck in a loop.
Yes.
And
yes, definitely.
There are two ways out of a self-fulfilling prophecy. One is you change the belief, and two, you change the way you act. So I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something that is going to be very disturbing to you. But if you really want to start changing this pattern,
yes,
you need to let men know at the end of your first date with them that you're not really interested in seeing them again, and you appreciate very much that they went out with you, and you wish them the best. And if you can ever do anything to help them, you'll be glad to.
Okay, what will that accomplish?
One thing, it changes your action. Remember I said there are two ways out of the self-fulfilling.
Oh, right.
Change your belief, change your action. And I think you'll find it very interesting.
Okay.
Because right now you don't believe you can walk away from them. You're afraid you're not picky enough. One of the ways you manage to pick men who treat you badly is you believe there aren't enough men to go around in the world. So you start doing what I'm talking about, I'll be shocked that you don't start having more dates than you've had, that you don't start carrying yourself with more self-respect, and that men don't start getting a lot more interested in you, so you can start picking higher quality ones.
Okay. So there is this whole... There's a real truth to the whole chase thing for men, that if you're not available to them, then they'll chase you. But,
I'm suggesting that as a gimmick. I'm suggesting it as
right.
you as an exercise in you valuing you. I'm not saying how do you lure them and turn them on more. I'm saying how do you deal with yourself in such a way that you stop thinking that each man is the last one you're ever going to have.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Call me back and let me know about how that one works out.
Okay.
Hey,
thank you very
thank
much,
you
Dr.
very
Bob.
Much.
Thank
our next caller is
okay.
Brian. He wants to know how to avoid the friend zone. So, Brian, do you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, you got to tell me what the heck the friend zone is.
Well, the friend zone is where, you know, you see a woman that's attractive, you go out on a couple of dates, but it really doesn't go any further, and you still end up hanging out, but I may want more of a relationship with her, but I'm being told that we're friends or she doesn't date her friends, so now I'm stuck in this friend zone. And so I'm trying to figure out is how to start not, first of all, avoid the friend zone, or if I'm in the friend zone, to get out of it.
So are you a nice guy, Brian?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I like to think I am.
Do you ever have fights with these friends?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
I should have fights. Well,
who you fight with them?
Well, actually, I don't fight with them. Because if I fight with them, then I'm not the nice guy. I'm the mean guy.
Oh, so, Bryant, I'm going to tell you a secret. A man who can't be a brute is a eunuch. And that women don't really get interested in a man who isn't a gentleman. A gentleman is a man who can be a brute and chooses not to be a brute. Sounds to me like you need to do more than buy the brute aftershave.
But, you know, like when they say, so is that kind of where the nice guy finished last? Where you're being nice?
Look,
so you're saying don't be nice?
Commitment and intercourse starts with encountering each other. Your niceness
right.
isn't just that. Are you really a nice guy? Or are you not telling me the whole story?
Well, that's interesting because the woman that I find very attractive and the one that I want to be in a relationship with, I'm nice to them. But if there's a woman that I really don't care about, then it really doesn't matter. But those are the ones that I usually can sleep with. Or, you know, that I could, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the fact is you've got kind of a version like Jeff. You don't want the ones
yes.
except ones that don't want you. And you're not
right.
really a nice guy. What you are is you're not being real. And you're giving them false advertising. So then you get frozen in your false advertising.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so if you can not want them, then you get them to want you. If you want them, they don't want you.
Right.
So with which
right.
woman are you more honest? The ones that you don't want and can have any way you want, or the ones that you want and can't get them to want you?
Probably. Obviously, the ones that I don't want, I usually tell them I don't want. Like, I don't want to be in a relationship or whatever it is that I say to them, and then that's where they're pursuing me as opposed to I'm not being honest with the ones that I do want. I don't tell them that, and then that's where I fall into the friend zone.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so what,
makes sense.
So if we're going to go after the ones that you really want, what is it that you're holding back that you're not telling them?
That I'm scared of being hurt.
Okay.
And I'm terrified of being hurt. And if this one that I do like and I open up, and then they don't want me back, then I feel hurt. But the ones that I don't want, go ahead.
Getting hurt's the price of honesty.
Yes, right. And so, and the ones that I don't necessarily want a relationship with, when I'm honest with them, that's what's attracting them. But the ones that I'm attracted to, I'm not being honest.
So
I'm not being honest telling them.
So I'm going to give you a little experiment to play with.
Okay.
I'd like you to play with the idea of telling the ones that you really want that you really won't be able to date them again because you're too interested in them. And you know that eventually you're going to be just dishonest with them, start trying to kiss their ass, and you know that they'll lose interest in you.
That is absolutely honest.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of breaks you out of your self-fulfilling prophecy cycle, and let's see what happens, and call me back and let me know.
Will do. Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Thanks a lot. You know, Brian's just facing, you know, such a bind, and there a lot of you have exactly that same bind. If you really want it, your unconscious belief, your that self-fulfilling prophecy kicks in. You don't believe they're going to want you, so you act in a way that causes them not to want you. They believe you're a nice guy, but they don't want you, or a nice girl, they don't want you, and then that all changes. And you know, we really would love to have you look at how to break out of the self-fulfilling prophecy and get the two free chapters for Transformed, The Science of Spectacular Living at www.rightliving.com/two-free-chapters. I just can't tell you how much every one of us has a self-fulfilling prophecy we're living in. And every one of us has, whether it's in relationship, whether it's in career, money, social standing, we don't know how to break out of that self-fulfilling prophecy, and we need to learn how to challenge what we talked about earlier, limiting beliefs. We need to develop new behaviors, and what we just did was give Bryant a new behavior to experiment with. Now, our next caller is Diana, and she wants to know, how does she trust that what I feel is love? Oh, man, that's a big one. Diana, are you there?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hello?
And you?
Good, no, thank you.
They told me that you wanted to know how to trust what you feel is love.
Yes, correct, yes.
Well, tell me about that, please.
Well, when I look at myself and I have been difficulty seeing and feeling what when I'm with my husband, and you know, it's I don't know if it's anymore just a custom or if it's anymore just a habit, or I would like to truly have the awareness that our companionship is. I know when I married because I was in love, but I would like to continue feeling what
Diana, so we're talking specifically about you and your husband?
About me and my husband, but mostly about myself. What I'm feeling is I want to be sure that I'm trusting the feeling that is love.
Well, what happens when you're angry with your husband?
I might express myself, or I might shut down at the moment and maybe later on talk about it. But
you don't love your husband enough to be honest with him moment by moment. Why aren't you honest with him?
I used to be very scared of him, and I...
Sounds like you're
and now,
still...
Sounds like I'm still scared?
Sounds like you're
maybe.
Scared. I should be honest with him.
Okay.
I don't care about feeling love, but love requires that we tell the truth. And that may include hating him, adoring him, feeling alone and angry at him that he's not talking to you more, he's not doing more of what you want. It sounds to me like we're not talking about the feeling of love, we're talking about you loving him enough and loving yourself enough to be fully honest with him.
Yes, you're totally right, Bob. I hear you.
So, are you willing to have an honest conversation with him about how much you really love each other, and are you willing to learn to love each other more?
I will, but the
you
thing
will?
Is, as I think about it, I would know really what to ask to say.
Well, just ask him to help you. Ask him to help you be more honest and tell him that you want it. You want to feel closer to him, that you want to share more with him, and that you want to feel secure so each of you can ask more of the other and test each other.
Okay.
What's love if you can't test each other? Who cares about feeling love? I'm much more interested in being in love. And that, you know, there's nobody that I have more anger with than my wife.
Okay.
So it sounds to me like you stopped being angry a long time ago and tried to hang on to your love, kind of like embalming it.
Yeah, sounds right.
Okay, so give us a call back and let us know how it goes, because life is about the journey, and bringing out the best is a challenge for all of us all the time. And we can't forget the fact that it's our unconscious mind that programs our limitations. And if we're not challenging our unconscious mind and stretching ourselves with new behaviors and new ways of being, it's just not going to happen. So join us next week. We'll be back on Wednesday next week, and we'd love to be on the journey with you, because there are no magic solutions. There's only bringing out the best day by day, moment by moment, inch by inch. And the real skill is to have a profound commitment to stepping into our next most radiant self, to step into our potential. And our potential is always just boiling inside of us, wanting to come out, and we have to learn to catch that. And if you want to be a guest next week, please email paul@rightliving.com. That's paul@right, WRIGHT, living.com. And we'll be talking to business owners and entrepreneurs next week. If you're a salesperson, if you need to do better with business, just give us a call. We'd love to have you on next week. We're going to be alternating our shows between entrepreneurs, salespeople, singles, and committed couples. So join us next week for entrepreneurs. And don't forget to pick up 2 free chapters of Transform the Science of Spectacular Living, www.rightliving.com/2 free chapters. And thanks very much for joining us today.